Trump asked me to get involved because my reputation, among other things in politics, is understanding of the convention process, the delegate process, and most of the major successful big conventions over the last 30 years I've been intimately involved in.
Did Roger recommend you for the job?
Roger was one of the two or three people who strongly recommended me, yes.
Is it a surprise that Paul Manafort wound up as the campaign chairman for Trump? No, of course not. That was engineered by Roger as a way to get Corey Lewandowski bounced out of the campaign. It took a couple months, but they did it. Roger has had a guiding hand in all of this. Now, Trump is hard to guide. He spits the bit out, but Roger's had as much influence on the campaign as anyone.
I think the campaign's been professionalized. Manafort's doing a phenomenal job. I think he instills confidence in the campaign that they didn't have before.
Did you give any reporters background on Lewandowski?
No.
Okay, so do you sort of...
Roger is not an official part of the campaign.
Did he bring you in?
No.
You were just talking about Paul Manafort and how much of a shady character he is. And considering his relationship with dictators, his role in lobbying, what contribution did he make to Donald Trump's campaign team?
It was clear when Roger Stone was fired, when denies being fired, the fact Manafort suggests that Stone recommended him and was absolutely crucial in using some of those dirty tactics to get Donald Trump elected. It shows just how bogus this idea of Trump being anti-establishment is, because Manafort's been involved with countless presidents over the decades and played the same role.
And Rich, why is it that Paul Manafort, we know that he has a relationship with Roger Stone, but denies him being involved in the campaign? I mean, is this all part of the plan? What is going on here?
I just think it's part of the way that they present one thing to the public and they talk about something. I mean, all through this film, they're talking to the cameras, because the cameras are following these people all over the place. They say one thing to the camera, then it cuts to a statement like that, where Paul Manafort's on television saying exactly the opposite. So they very carefully script what they say in public, and they don't care that it's not the truth. It's all about creating this image that gets them where they want to go, and they don't really care about what they have to do to get there.
And isn't that disturbing, Zach, that these politicians are lying through their teeth? Don't they think that people can see right through this and hold them to account?
They've had many decades of perfecting the strategy. It's interesting that the film starts with Roger Stone talking about as a kid in the school canteen in a mock election, where he, at the time, ironically, is back in JFK, and he tells all the other kids that Nixon will make you go to school on Saturday to win this mock election. He said he learned there the value of disinformation, and we've seen this process throughout his political career, and it is very worrying. It makes a mockery of democracy and allows them to distort politics in the interest of those at the top.
Mm. And Rich, we know that Roger Stone is dubbed as the political dirty trickster. What examples do we see in this documentary of his other stunts?
Well, I mean, all of the stuff, all of the crooked Hillary stuff, you know, just suddenly creating this huge cloud of suspicion around the Clintons, around Obama, just everything that kind of, it's just this huge cloud of misinformation that just goes around, and everybody starts to wonder, well, what's the truth? And it's very hard to pick the truth out of it, especially if you're leaning toward that angle. He talks very openly about the fact that he doesn't believe in any of the political points of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. He identifies as a libertarian, though, he says.
Yeah, and he says he doesn't believe in their any of their policies. And yet he put a Republican in the White House, and mm-hmm. he doesn't care.
And what does Stone get out of all of this?
I don't know. Do you think he just enjoys the power of disrupting the system? He just seems like a pure disruptor, doesn't he?
Absolutely. One thing I'll say, I suppose, in terms of his libertarian leanings, I think going back to Nixon, if you look at the 1960s at the time in rising struggles, particularly the civil rights movement, Nixon was the kind of block against that. It's why he's got so much respect for Nixon. I think he's very much...
He has a big tattoo of Nixon on his back.
Yes.
And he splashes that throughout the documentary.
He does, and I think going back to the question of racism, I think it's why it becomes such a key issue. Haldeman, who was the chief of staff under Nixon, wrote in one of his diaries, Nixon said, the problem was essentially the blacks. And what he meant by that was black struggle became the nexus for other social struggles. It was leading to concessions being won, social reforms on the system. So he knew that drawing back the civil rights struggles and the black struggles was absolutely crucial. That's why I think racism has played such a key role in some of his tactics. As you said, he might not necessarily have massive racist leanings, but he knew it was essential to push forward this kind of libertarian model that he does agree with, which is the rolling back of state intervention.
He knew he had to play that racism card in order to win votes, essentially. And I want to actually ask you more about that a bit later on.
Now the children's table is the adult table, and Alex Jones is, you know, passing the dinner rolls, and we're all conspiracy American now.
Even if Donald Trump loses, I still win, because the Stone brand has been front and center, and my brand of politics have finally come into their own. CNN, MSNBC, they're now the fringe. Alt-right communications, we are the mainstream.
Did Trump really believe that Obama was not born in the United States? Does Roger Stone really believe that Bill Clinton raped all these women? You know, it doesn't matter to them is more the point. For them, there are no boundaries. Anything goes. Anything that wins, fine.
If you read Roger's blog, The Stone Zone, or follow him on Twitter, it's like coming attractions for the attacks Donald Trump will be launching 2 weeks later.
It is Hillary who hires the heavy-handed pride detectives who break into these women's homes and ransack them, who threaten their children, who kill their pets.
She's married to a man who was the worst abuser of women in the history of politics. And Hillary was an enabler, and she treated these women horribly.
Roger's, you know, relationship with Trump has been so interconnected that it's hard to define what's Roger and what's Donald. While it will be clearly a Trump presidency, I think it's influenced by a Stone philosophy.
That notion of win at any cost pretty much summarizes Stone's brand of politics. If we look at the mainstream media angle, Roger Stone and Donald Trump were able to discredit the media, and the media became powerless against them. How were the campaign team able to do this, and why was this so effective?
I find it just shocking that they've been able to kind of marginalize all the mainstream and bring in people like Alex Jones and Breitbart as kind of the voice of this generation. I find it just horrifying that people are going there.
Alex Jones is, of course, the famous conspiracy theorist.
Insane conspiracy theorist, like far right wing, and really frightening. I mean, the clips that you see of him are pretty hilarious, actually, because he's just completely rabid and crazy.
But he's
part of this, and it's this disruptive presence. It's trying to shake the system up and create a smaller government and let people do what they want. And it's not really the Republican agenda, but they're using the Republican Party to do it. And
yeah, that is a very interesting point. And yeah. Zach, I want to get your thoughts on this sort of fake news era that we're in and post-truth era.
Yeah, I mean, it's very worrying, the clip with Roger Stones where he said the NBCs, the CNN, actually, they're marginalised now, the Breitbart, and the more alt-right communications, it might be a slight exaggeration, but of becoming the more mainstream news source. It's something the author Tariq Ali called about the extreme centre. It's coming into the mainstream, which is very, very concerning, because this has a ripple effects, actually. It gives a confidence to the far right. Some of the appalling attacks we saw after the Trump presidency, because the platform given to the prominent far-right blogs such as Breitbart is very concerning.
And how are left-wing groups trying to combat this?
I think what was very interesting over here, I know there's I forget the name of the blog in the States, but certainly over here you saw the election of Jeremy Corbyn, that social media was absolutely instrumental in that. The work of Momentum were combating the government's austerity agenda and helping to push some of Corbyn's policies forward, and it had a bigger impact in getting to young people in the general election.
So there's still some hope, I see. And I think, going back to the documentary, I think one of the funniest lines that Roger Stone says is that politics is show business for ugly people. But on a serious note, I mean, is this what politics has been reduced to now, Rich? I mean, is this merely a freak show, a circus, and not serving the best interests of the people anymore?
Well, you kind of hope that this will snap people out of it. It's like the fact that Donald Trump was elected president should make everybody stop and say, wait a minute, something's horribly wrong here. You know, the fact that Britain voted for Brexit made Britain stop. And then the next election, everybody kind of hesitated and thought, wait a minute. And the vote shifted quite dramatically because people spoke up and spoke the truth, which hadn't been spoken up during the campaign originally. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that that's what we see in America. I'm hoping that the people who just didn't speak up during the election last year will come out at the next one and kind of make the truth known and get because I think the truth has to win out in the end. Mm-hmm. It's too depressing to think that these people are going
to
win.
And I'd love to end it on that note, actually. Thank you, Richard, and thank you, Zach, for your time. And that's it for this episode of Doc Review. Thank you to both my guests and to you. I've been Camila Shambayati.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini l-Islami dini wal-Azam ghayru dini Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about, in fact, some of the rules related to fasting and Ramadan, since we are in the month of mercy, in the month of barakah, and in the month of Ramadan. So we're going to deal with this, in fact, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but In 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahth al-Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching maqasid, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahth al-Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahth al-Kharij, he started Bahth al-Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Shaweed, our guest speaker, as always. We are talking about Ayatollah Khamenei's views or fatwas issued regarding Ramadan and fasting. Since we are, in fact, near the end of the month of Ramadan, so we saw it fit and we deemed it suitable to talk about some of the laws which are somehow pertinent and related to the end of this blessed month. Sheikh Javid, let me ask you this question at the beginning of this episode. A person was fasting here in Iran, in fact, on the 20th of Ramadan, right? And he traveled to another country, a neighboring country, such as, for example, the UAE. And there, in the UAE, the government declares this is the first of Sha'wal, the beginning of Sha'wal, which is the next month after Ramadan.
Sure.
And it's a governmental issue or declaration. So how should he go about it?
Well, I should say that some Sunni countries, declare the Eid day one day usually before the Shia countries. And according to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, it is necessary to make sure that the moon has been sighted, the crescent of the month of Shawwal has been sighted. Otherwise, the beginning of the next month is not ascertained, it's not established. And of course, mu'mineen, the followers of Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, can check with his official website and see whether the beginning of the month of Ramadan has been announced or not. As long as they are not certain, they should not break their fast, no matter what the government might, have announced, on their official channels or through their radio or TV channels, And so everyone has to follow his own mujtahid's fatwa. Now, according to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, the beginning of the moon is established by using, anything which is possible, which can be used to sight the moon, and it can be established by by seeing the moon using binoculars, telescopes, and anything like that. And the Shia religious authorities differ in their opinion when it comes to
us. I will ask you some separate questions regarding that, obviously,
so
later
that's,
on.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's important, Sunni, especially Sunni Muslim countries, also have a lot of problems. We see that in the month of Ramadan, let's say Pakistan, they have a halal committee, okay? Mm-hmm. And in that committee, there are Sunni scholars and Shia scholars. They sit together and they try to cite the crescent. And of course, we see that Pakistan declares the or announces the Eid day even one day after some other countries, 2 days mm-hmm. after some other countries. Mm-hmm. While Saudi Arabia and in the United Arab Emirates, they sometimes declare the Eid, announce the Eid day 2 days before Pakistan. So Iran is in the middle, you know. Iran usually, Iran has its own standards mm-hmm. to based on the fatwa of Supreme Leader Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. So whenever the moon is sighted, or when it is established that it is the month of the beginning of the month of Shawwal, so that the Eid day or the month or the beginning of the next month is announced on the official government TV channels or radios.
So this traveler, in fact, should listen to his own mujtahid or religious authority back in Iran, and changing of the location or geography doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference, sure.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break. We'll be back and continue our program. Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about Ramadan-related jurisprudential laws according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, although we have discussed this question with you in the past, but I would like to explain whether the beginning of the month of Shawwal can be established by seeing the moon through binoculars or telescope. You also had a quick reference before the break about moon sighting.
Yeah, this is a very important question because the Shia Muslims remain somehow, you know, at polarized mm-hmm. when regarding the beginning of the month of Shawwal, because they wish to celebrate the Eid day together with their families. So we can see sometimes that in a single family there are individuals following one marja and the other individuals following another marja. So.
Yes.
Some members of the family fast and others, you know, break their fast and celebrate the Eid. So it becomes quite, you know, difficult for the family.
I see.
And that's why it is because of the different fatwas given by the religious authorities. Of course, every mujtahid has his own principles and foundations based on which he issues his fatwa. And as Grand Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that the beginning of the month of Shawwal or any other month, lunar month, is established by sighting the moon by any means, whatever the means. It could be binoculars or it could be a telescope or anything which may magnify the particles or things in the space which would, enable the individual to sight the moon and find the crescent. So if the crescent is found by using, a telescope, a telescope, that's okay with Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, and the beginning of the month of Shawwal is established. But, you know, other religious authorities, or maybe some few other religious authorities, have stated that the beginning of the month of Shawwal cannot be established by using binoculars or a telescope. For example, Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that one has to sight the moon with his own naked eyes.
Mm-hmm, I see. Sheikh Javid, we are at the end of our program. Please elaborate for our audience about the amount of fitra. How much is it, you know, and when is it necessary to pay? Can it be paid in any time during the month of Ramadan or after Eid al-Fitr?
Again, I would like to say that according to some religious authorities, including, for example, Ayatollah Sistani, he's of the view that the Zakat al-Fitr can be given any time during the month of Ramadan. But this is not what Ayatollah Khamenei says. He is of the view that the Zakat al-Fitr has to be separated in the morning or in the evening of the Eid day. For example, today is the last day of Ramadan. And so in the, from Maghrib time until the midday of the next day, it is one has to, you know, separate his Zakat al-Fitr and put it aside. He should make sure to give the Zakat al-Fitr as soon as possible to the poor and to the needy. And when it comes to the amount of Zakat al-Fitr, of course, the amount of Zakat al-Fitr is worth 3 kilos of food stuff. It could be 3 kilos of rice, 3 kilos of noodles. And of course, you can give the money worth 3 kilos of rice, the money worth 3 kilos of bread, or 3 kilos of anything. And depending on what the staple food is, you have to give it to the needy people. You have to give it as soon as possible.
Okay.
And you should give it to the poor people in your city.
I see.
Not poor people living in a different country.
I see.
As far as possible. But if it's not possible, and if there are no poor people, you can send the money. The money that you have put aside to another country.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, for your nice contribution to this program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Rahman Rahim Mannan Kareem Salam Alim La ilaha illa hum Ghaffar Jameel Wahhab Latif Tawwab Samee Basir La ilaha illa hum وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
the topic that we're trying to discuss related to tomorrow, Yawm al-Quds, which is the day that all people that understand the conditions and they are human enough to understand that they need to support, come, of course, led by Muslimin. They're the Muslimin are the ones, the Muslim leadership, the Islamic leadership, designed this, ordered it, commanded Muslimin, and the Muslimin have been coming out for all these years, but there have been others that have joined as well. While that armed movement is necessary, here's the question. The question is, how will the Zionist regime come down? How will Israel be wiped off the map? How will that happen? There seems to be different views regarding this. And of course, I'm not sure how much people actually spend time thinking about that. It is something to think about. How are we going to bring down the Zionist regime? What is our what's our strategy? What are we supposed to be doing? Is what's happening in Gaza, is what happened and is happening in Lebanon, in Syria, the part that is related to Israel, the armed movements and the defense mechanism and the defense system systems set up in those areas. And hopefully we will see that in the West Bank as well. Are these ways that the Zionist regime is going to be dismantled, is going to be wiped off of the map? Is it going to be some missile that Iran is going to launch from somewhere within its borders, or Syria is going to launch, or Iran is going to launch from within Syrian borders, as they say, because the Islamic Republic works with people. They don't go into somebody's house and say, we're going to do this, forget you, and so on and so forth. Yes, of course, if the Americans use a different country like they did in Iraq to shoot down and to assassinate believers, Iranian and Iraqi, then they're full rights. They're not going to coordinate that with anybody. You killed the believers there in Iraq. Now the American base in Iraq is going to be attacked, and we're not going to make arrangements with anyone or seek permission from anyone. But to do something within the borders of a country with their presence, with the presence of the Iranians, and do something that those governments don't want, no, that's not their policy. The people of every country decide what happens in their country, and they work together. It's a collaboration. It's not like the relationship of the Americans in Iraq. They go into Iraq. The Iraqi people didn't want Haj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis to be assassinated. The Iraqi people didn't want Haj Qasim to be assassinated. The Iraqi people didn't want the Americans to do any of the things that they wanted. But the Americans don't make any arrangements with the Iraqi government or with anyone in Iraq. Just go do whatever they want. That's not how the Islamic Republic is with these areas. Anyway, is it going to be some Syrian missile, some Hezbollah missile? And Hezbollah, again, is also doing things based on what they see, right? The Islamic Republic supports them, supplies them, and so on and so forth. But they make decisions based on what they see, right? Are they going to be shooting some missiles? Is Hamas or Jihad al-Islami going to start launching missiles against the government establishments in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, and wherever else they may be? Is that how the Israeli government and the Israeli regime is going to be wiped off of the map? Is it how the Westerners say that what they mean by wiping it off the map is to the way they think, because this is how the Americans do it. They say, we're going to wipe off Hiroshima off the map. And what do? They nuked it. That's how they do it. When they want to wipe a place off the map, their version is bombs, the mother of all bombs. They dropped it in Afghanistan. All these bombs, they're in love with bombs, destruction, wipe it off. That's what they mean when they say wipe it off. Is that how it is? Do we think that these organizations with their arms and their defense mechanisms are going to be dismantling the Israeli regime? Some may be thinking that way. The way Imam Khomeini has told us this regime will be wiped off the map is not through those means. Although those means are necessary for defending the people who need defending in those areas that were mentioned. But for the Israeli regime to be wiped off the face of the earth, Imam Khomeini's strategy from the day he announced Yawm al-Quds is a people's movement marching every year until it will be possible that they march, no missile, no bomb, no guns. Of course, again, at that point, Israelis and the Americans, their backers, will try to use force. Hezbollah, Hamas, Jihad al-Islami, perhaps other movements, Ansarullah, the Yemeni's people, they will all be prepared to defend the people that will be marching. And they will not allow a massacre of those people who are marching into Palestinian cities that have other names that the Zionist regime has put on them. The people will march and they will dismantle it without destroying anything except for the symbols of Zionism, the symbols of Kufr. Besides that, everything will remain and will all be about construction. This is a strategy, brothers, sisters. This is a different way of dealing with things. Let me use the example of the Islamic Republic. There were those who believed that we need to fight the system militarily with arms. And they did take up arms against the regime in Iran, the Shah's regime. They took up arms. They smuggled guns in. They smuggled bombs in. And they tried to use them against the regime. Not that the regime doesn't deserve this. That's another point. Not that Israel doesn't deserve it. Anyone in Israel, and that includes a lot of, unfortunately, people in Israel, have been part of this occupation, have been part of the killing of innocent people. So not that they don't deserve to be treated in that way. But what is our way of dealing with these systems, these governments? With the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini's strategy, based on what he understood from Quran and Hadith, is while there need to be people who defend the innocent, but the way you're going to be taking down the system is by popular movement. People need to come out on the streets and say that this system should be no more. When a global march is launched against the Israeli regime and it marches, breaks down those walls, goes into their parliament, their centers of government, and demand that whoever is not originally Palestinian must leave, and here are the jets, get out of here. And there is no such government any longer. It's all gone. When that happens, nobody can get in the way. No nuke can stop people flooding the streets of Haifa and other cities in Palestine that are under Israeli rule, unfortunately. This march on Quds Day, going out in numbers, whatever numbers we can afford. We can't say, oh, there isn't enough, we're not going to go. No, whatever the numbers are, it's a global effort. When you add every 5, 10, 20, 100, 200 or more in whatever city, whatever location to the numbers that are global, it keeps on adding to the figure. But that is the strategy of Islam. That's the strategy of the leadership, that popular march, people marching every year annually, will lead to a march that will actually walk into Palestine. And inshallah, we will see that. We will see that. Look at the march on the Day of Quds in this way and understand how much more important it is than what you ever thought it was. This isn't simply just going out there, creating awareness. All those things are going to happen. It is giving awareness to people. It is showing a face to the Zionists. But it's building up more than anything. This is the strategy of the Islamic global movement to wipe the Zionists off the map. And inshallah, it will happen. It has taken quite some time. And it will take some more time. But this is how it's going to happen. Arms need to be there for defense. But the way that these governments are going to be taken down is by the demand of their own people.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Oh, yeah. I will caress with my bare hands every precious grain of sand, every stone and every tree. 'Cause no matter what can never hurt you, 'cause your soul will always be free.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. Social relations cannot be reinforced except through honesty and truthfulness. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says that the faith of believers depends on the health of heart, and the health of heart depends on honesty and truthfulness. The commander of the faithful and the leader of the pious, Imam Ali, peace upon him, says that truthfulness is one of the signs of faith. Real honesty means honesty in face, speech, and act. The clear example of such honesty is Imam Ali, peace upon him, who says, "By God, I do not persuade you to any obedience of God except that I have done it before you, and I do not prevent you from any transgression except that I have shunned it before you." The lowest degree of honesty is to tell the truth in all conditions. This means to be careful so that what we say complies with what is in our heart. For instance, if we say to God in daily prayer, "You alone do we worship, and to you alone do we turn for help," we should pay attention that we prefer God's commands over anything else. God says in Ayah 15 of Surah Hujurat that the truthful are the ones who believe in Allah and His Apostle, and then never doubt, and wage jihad with their possessions and their souls in the way of Allah. The foodstuffs that we have in Ramadan should fulfill the nutritious needs of our body. Therefore, they should include carbohydrates, fat, fiber, vitamins, enzymes, and minerals which are needed by the body. These substances should be taken in an orderly program between iftar and sahari, which is pre-dawn meal. Iftar shouldn't contain voluminous and heavy foods because the stomach has been empty for several hours and it shouldn't be loaded suddenly. It is better to break our fast with warm water, tea, and dates. A little soup would be a good choice too. Little liquid foods are recommended for iftar. However, dairies had better to be avoided in iftar. When the blessed month of Ramadan is in warm season and the time between iftar and sahari is short, dinner is an extra meal which is better to be avoided. Instead, it is better to have beverages and juices from iftar till dawn. As it was said earlier, fruits, salads, and vegetables are useful for Ramadan nights. In order to prevent thirst during daytime, it is good to take bread and other cereals which contain bran. This keeps the glycogen in the body at normal level and the person feels less thirst. Drinking too much water will cause weakness and stomachache and will lead to digestive problems. The blessed month of Ramadan is a good opportunity to liberate the self from the dominance of carnal and mean desires. It is the best time to taste the divine mercy through penitence. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, had a very high degree in spirituality and irfan, that is Islamic Gnosticism, although he is famous mostly for his unmatched courage and uncompromising spirit against the enemies of humanity. The conspicuous characteristic in the Imam was that he always considered himself a servant of Allah and was a very God-very person. Imam Khomeini would say on the blessed month of Ramadan, "This is banquet from God. This is a bounty and mercy from God, which he gives a weak and base creature to be able to ascend." Imam Khomeini always observed remembrance of God in his speech. During Ramadan, he used to spend his time in prayer and supplication. When he was in the holy city of Najaf, he would fast for around 18 hours while he was in his 70s. Moreover, he would have his iftar after performing the dusk and isha ritual prayers and even the non-obligatory, that is, recommended prayers of this time. During the days of Ramadan too, he would perform noon and afternoon ritual prayers with all their recommended prayers, and then he would recite the supplications after prayers and return home. This was difficult even for young seminary students. Thus, Imam Khomeini's behavior would have effective role in training young students and ordinary people. The Imam's successor, Ayatollah Khamenei, says on him, "The Imam usually had no meetings unless it was necessary, but after the month of Ramadan, when one saw him and he spoke to people in a meeting, you would understand well that he had become more luminous during this month. One would feel this. A nearly 90-year-old man would move and advance during this month. He was always moving, but in the month of Ramadan more seriously."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, welcome to your own program, A Muslim Lady, where we have been discussing so many various important issues regarding Muslim lady. I hope you have enjoyed all our discussions, and I also hope you will benefit from today's discussions. I am Farman Ali Masumi, and with me in our studios, my wife, Radia Batul Najafi.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Inshallah, we are going to discuss a very important issue again regarding Muslim lady, and that is in a Muslim society, you know, the expectations a Muslim society has from a Muslim lady. Our ladies, our Muslim ladies, they should get the confidence. They should study, they should gain knowledge about these things. They should study these beautiful riwayat and verses of the Holy Quran. Then they can get this confidence within themselves. Another expectation our Muslim society has from a Muslim lady to bring spirituality and mentally peace as being a whole society, you know? I mean, like woman can bring peace and tranquility physically, spiritually, and mentally within her family. Likewise, she can bring this peace and tranquility in the society. Definitely, if she is a great mother, great daughter, great wife, then this peace and tranquility can transform from this family to the society. So our society has these kind of expectations also. But these expectations, when she can fulfill all her duties towards her family, husband, and the most important thing is towards her creator, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Sometimes I give this example, like we have the solar system, yeah, and the sun is playing the main role because of the heat of the sun and the light of the sun and energy of the sun, you know, all the planets are just moving around. So sometimes I just think that, you know, the role of mother or a wife, a Muslim lady in a society, especially in a family, is like a sun, like everyone needs her amazing energy and emotions, you know. And that kindness and soft-heartedness, because if she's on and she's not off, you know, she's fully present there, then everything moves very, you know, politely and with harmony.
Smoothly. And according to the order.
Otherwise, you cannot replace the place and the status of mother or a wife with any other thing. Maybe you have the best cook at your home, maybe you have the best, you know, cleaner, maybe you have the best teacher, but mother is mother, you know, like mother's way of feeding children or babysitter is totally different. Like you can buy anything, but you can't buy that emotions of the mother, you know, that beautiful care and, you know, beautiful love of mother cannot be, you know, buy from anywhere. So therefore, only mother can play that role. And therefore, Islam is very, very stressing a lot that you have to be there. That is your first duty. And after that, yeah, you shouldn't waste your time. If your children are grown up, for example, sometimes you don't have children. You know, Allah sometimes gives you very late. So you are in your, for example, late 20s, you married early 20s, and you don't have children, you have done your studies. So why you are just sitting? You have come, serve your society, you know, with so many conditions, definitely, but come. So, but if you have a small kids, children in your home, then you have to look at your, that amazing role like a sun, you know, you are the solar system, mother system, you know, you are running that amazing system by your amazing presence.
Thank you. if a mother plays her role in her family, definitely we would have a peaceful society. We would not have that much criminals, crimes in the society.
Beautiful.
Because base of all, root of all these crimes, it goes to the love and the respect, you know, the needs spiritually and psychologically they didn't get in their houses. It means their mothers, means, for example, haven't played their role as they should have played. So when we talk about the qualities, about the duties of a mother, a Muslim lady, itself, it shows that a lot of things on the society depends on this.
Exactly. 100%. Absolutely. Therefore, you know, I always say, this vitamins, you know, the family needs from, especially from a mother, vitamin K, the kisses, you know, vitamin H, that hugs, vitamin R, that respect, you know, that beautiful way. So all these vitamins will remain, will become the part of the personality of children till, you know, end of their life. If they are lacking, yeah, in those vitamins, because mother wasn't present and she was so busy in society, very productive. She's the best designer. I've seen some ladies, they are best in their field. They're maybe gold medalists, but they're worse in their house, you know, like the husband is not satisfied at all. The children are saying, we don't like our mother, you know, but the media is praising her, you know, the company is praising her. So what kind of, you know, active society, yeah, you are not playing your main role. So if you are not giving those vitamins to your family members, that means what? You are just giving to the society abnormal, weak, you know, children, which, and those children are not independent because they're always dependent on others. They're always looking for love, for those vitamins, because they didn't get that respect, you know, from home. So they easily get deceived by a bad company. They go for drugs, as you said, or the criminals. The main reason is that they are not getting enough time, especially from mother's side, because mostly husbands and the fathers, they have quality time. Maybe, you know, duration is less, but they are there in making big decisions. Yeah. But if mother is present there, then, you know, easily you can balance the absence of father because of his main duty, which is earning, you know, that Allah has, you know, given to him on his shoulder, and that he has to do it. And here I have to be present because this is my duty, and Muslim society is expecting from me.
When we speak about the quality time we spend with our kids in our family, it shows that our Muslim ladies, if they give quality time, they play their role in their families, then definitely husbands also get attracted. They pay attention more to their families, to their children, no matter how much they busy are.
Why? How? I didn't get your point.
Because the need of a man, you know, mentally, physically, and psychologically, it can be fulfilled only within the family system. No matter how busy he is, no matter how many friends he has, in the end of the day, the tranquility he needs, his mind needs, his, you know, spirit needs, it is fulfilled only within the family. That's why if a man sees that he does not get that pills, that vitamins in his home, so he tries to get all the vitamins from different ways, which can harm his family relations, which can in result harm the society. So when a Muslim lady plays her role as a mother, as a wife, in a best way, in her family, so there is no need for men to get all these pills and vitamins outside of house.
So she's benefiting her husband too by fulfilling her duties.
Yeah. Her whole Islamic society.
True, it's true.
So this is expectations of Muslim society from a Muslim lady. So we are going to have a short break. Please, listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned. Inshallah, we will come back soon.